Welcome to LGBTFC, coming to you from Europe. This is Luke, joined today by...
Hey, it's Bryant.
Bryant, why are we in Europe?
I mean, we're on vacation, but whenever there's an opportunity, we're still going to bring you some amazing stories of folks who are sharing their experiences around the intersections of the LGBTQ experience and soccer supporter culture.
That's right. And that's what we're doing for y'all on this episode. Before we do that, though, we're just going to quickly see how we identify. My name is Luke. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I identify as gay. What about you, Bryant?
Well, I'm Bryant. I'm also gay and he, him pronouns as well.
Look at that. So, as we said, we are in Europe and we spent our first several days on our vacation in the Netherlands, where we got to go to a couple matches at Feyenoord in Rotterdam and Ajax in Amsterdam. What are your thoughts on those matches, Bryant?
Well, first off, the Feyenoord match, it poured down rain, so that got delayed to start. But I think what struck me the most about that match was the fact that, one, they had netting all around the field, like in between the stands and the field, and there was literally a moat. Like there was a dugout trench between the stands and the field. And come to find out from literally everybody that we spoke to, they were like, oh yeah, the fans there are pretty ruthless. They're known for being sort of hooligans. And apparently last season they threw a lighter at a player and it hit him in the head and he was bleeding. And so hence the netting and the moat.
Yeah, the netting was a new feature this season. So we got to see something fresh in the start of the new season with netting to protect the players. It was a little like watching a soccer match being played in a batting practice facility.
That's a good analogy or a good visualization there for folks. Otherwise, I mean, I know that they were playing a team that just moved up from the lower division the year before, and they were greatly outmatched, the team that had moved up, that was Almere. And so the home crowd was very happy because they essentially dominated. And so I think the energy in there was fun. Even during the rain delay, the energy was fun. And so that was a pretty good experience.
It was, absolutely. And then we went to Ajax Amsterdam, where they were playing a UEFA Champions League qualifier, or maybe it was Europa League. I don't know. They were playing some team from Bulgaria who actually looked pretty good. And it was the second of two legs where Ajax had gone over to that team's stadium last week and beaten them 4-1. So they had a 3-goal cushion and they kind of played like they had a 3-goal cushion, which is to say most of the fans were getting pretty agitated throughout the game as we were sitting there amongst the, let's say, 60,000 or so Ajax faithful.
Well, I don't know how many people were there, but it was a huge stadium. And I was going to say, like, it was good that they had that lead, because when we rolled in, first off, the crowd was amazing. They started off with so much energy. They'd given away these like white flags to wave, and everybody through the entire stadium was waving them and singing. And the energy was frickin' epic in the stands. And then you get down to the field and it was like a lead weight. Like, the Ajax team themselves looked so disconnected, so disjointed. They looked like they weren't even having fun on the field. And then the Bulgarian team, I think they started off a little shaky. They definitely looked a little tentative. And then they found their groove and they started to really press and score.
Yeah, they scored and they came this close to scoring another goal with about 10 minutes left in the game. And I thought, oh boy, we're about to watch something not dissimilar to what we experienced a couple months ago when LAFC were hosting a team from Costa Rica in the CONCACAF first round. And fortunately, that ended up working out for us. But yeah, it was definitely a different experience. I think one of the things that I took away from it, for starters, the crowds were something else. I mean, when you're at the Kuip, where Feyenoord play with 50,000 fans in the stands, it's loud. They had several songs that people were getting into from all across the stadium. Their supporters were singing most of the match. Then at Johan Cruyff, where Ajax Amsterdam play, as you pointed out, the crowd had all those flags and they had this cool song they had to be in, all waving the flags as the players are out on the pitch and just basically making clear, like, we have the home field advantage. But the quality of the play on the field, I will just say, having now watched Major League Soccer for a number of years, I was expecting more, I think, than what we actually saw. Like, to your point about Ajax, They looked so disconnected. There were certainly some players who were incredibly talented, but as a team, wasn't a particularly impressive experience.
I think we keep getting fed this narrative that MLS is like second or third tier. And like, even with Messi coming over, you know, the like pervasive thought that I keep hearing are like, oh, he's selling out, or he's really coming down a level, or oh, he's near the end of his career. And yes, he's definitely near the end of his career. And at the same time, it didn't feel like Eredivisie was superior to MLS.
Yeah, I would say they're not. And we were seeing some of the best teams in the league. The quality of the play we saw from Almere City, which is the team that just got promoted, was nothing better than you'd see from a bottom of the table team in Major League Soccer. And the quality of the play from Feyenoord and from Ajax was probably toward the top of the table in Major League Soccer. But, you know, you could go to a Major League Soccer game with LAFC, St. Louis City, New York City FC, Philly,
Cincinnati,
thank you. And you'd see just as good, if not better, play. So on that level, I hope that folks who are hearing this episode, who are supporters of Major League Soccer, first of all, do come if you can. If you ever have the chance to see a game in Europe, you know, we were here in the Netherlands, check it out if you can. The experience, particularly in the stands, is pretty incredible. But in terms of the quality of play, I think folks need to just sort of recognize, like, there's a lot of really good players out there, and we have a lot of them in Major League Soccer. Maybe overall the league suffers a little bit from the salary caps and the overall salary rules that make it difficult to build depth. So over the long haul, teams struggle a little bit. But the quality of the play on the pitch that we see day in and day out in the U.S. has gotten to a level where it is very competitive with what you see in some of the second-tier leagues in Europe. I mean, Eredivisie is not Bundesliga or Premier League, but it's still a very good league.
So I want to say two things. One is that in my commentary about the quality of play of MLS, it's not to disparage any other league. It's for us to stop with this narrative that MLS is not a good league, or this continuation of this conversation around like bad-mouthing ourselves. Let's move away from that. Let's celebrate what it is and keep making it better, whether that's in the stands or on the pitch. So that's my first thought. My second thought was getting back to the supporters and just the crowd mentality. I think what was also interesting, and it's just a difference, it's not a better or worse situation, was I actually didn't see a defined supporter section within Feyenoord. And maybe it was just that I didn't see them. In Ajax, they definitely had that supporter section. And I think because it's such a large stadium, it didn't feel as defined as our 3252. And the other thing that I would note is the 3252 is going from start to finish. Like, they just keep going. And similar to what we had spoken about last summer when we went to England and saw some matches there, there's definitely breaks in the cheering, the chanting, the singing. And so that's just, it's a difference that I think was sort of unique to this. And another major difference is that the entire stadium starts singing things. So maybe that's a call for 3252 to start to educate the rest of our stadium on some of our cheers and songs and be a little more intentional about that.
Yeah, I think that was Bryant just volunteering to help teach some of the folks in the Southwest side where we typically sit to sing some of our songs with 3252. One of the things we got to do on this vacation is meet a couple people, one of whom will be familiar to regular listeners of our show.
Yeah, we got to meet Bowie, who we interviewed in episode 14, I believe.
Wow, you got the number right there.
I know, I did a little research.
I love it. Yes, Bowie Dean, who joined us on our second Men's World Cup episode. We got to sit down and have a drink with him in Amsterdam.
I mean, we had a few drinks. We went to a brewery of his recommendation, which was a great recommendation. We had some beers, we had some snacks, and yeah, and it was great just to sort of like put an actual person to a two-dimensional person, I guess, a 3D person to a two-dimensional person in getting to meet in person and hang out and talk all things soccer and get to see a little bit of his world.
And we also got to meet someone who I've been following on social media for a little while, goes by LAFC Dutch Dave, Dave Gomez, who is an LAFC original supporter who now lives in Amsterdam with his wife, who greeted us with big open arms when we got to Amsterdam. It was so incredible. Want to thank you, Dave, for being so friendly, so kind to essentially a perfect stranger, giving us some tips on visiting Amsterdam, and just being willing to just sit down and chat with us and talk about soccer and talk about Amsterdam and talk about whatever.
that was also a lot of great fun. We essentially landed in Amsterdam via the train and then immediately hopped on a ferry, went over and met up with Dave. And like you said, he was just super cool and great to chat with. And it is sort of funny to think about, like, the, I don't know what it is, the, like, the vernacular or the commonality of language that we have, that we can just immediately jump into talking about LAFC and Los Angeles and, you know, this city and community that we love block by block, and not skip a beat and just go right there with Dave. And it was great to meet him and get to see a little bit of his world over here. And yeah, so thanks for meeting up with us, Dave.
Yeah, it was awesome to meet Dave and awesome to get to meet Voey in person. I want to call out something you mentioned a little bit earlier, which was referencing Messi. So while we're here in Europe, there's a big match happening at BMO Stadium in LA, which is with Lionel Messi and Inter Miami coming to play against the Los Angeles Football Club. We will not be able to watch that game because it will be being played at 3:30 in the morning our time. But definitely wishing all the best to the black and gold and to everyone who's going to the match. Hope you'll have a really, really great time. I suspect we will not have this episode published until after that game happens. So in that event, we're sorry we didn't get a chance to say anything about it on this episode, but do really hope that folks have a great time, had a great time, and that it was an entertaining game. The other thing we just want to note, since our last episode, there's been a whole lot that's been going on in international football, particularly in the women's game and specifically with Spain. We're not going to say a whole lot about that on this episode because, Bryant, we're actually going to be in Spain in a few days. And so we'll say some more about that when we're actually there. But I did just want to call out and thank everyone who's been standing up for Jenny Hermoso and the entire Spanish women's football team. They deserve our support. And frankly, I think it has been really moving to see the amount of support of these women who really, truly deserve a federation that supports them, understands them, listens to them, upholds them, rather than what we're seeing right now with a federation that's basically kind of attacking them just weeks after they won their first ever World Cup for their squad. So just want to call that out. We'll say more about that on our next episode. So that's all we got on this opener for this special episode. We have two incredible guests for you, and I want to just first apologize up front. The sound quality is spotty. I was using these little mics that we got for this trip to make it work better, and I think, frankly, using my iPhone probably would have worked better. But regardless, tried to really make it come across as best as possible. We had two really amazing guests, Chantal van der Putten, who is a supporter of Feyenoord and on the board of the Rosa Kameraden. And then we also had Diana Vandenborn, who is a supporter of Ajax Amsterdam. And honestly, just give this a listen, check it out, share this with folks who you think would be interested. Really loved meeting with both Diana and Chantal. Want to thank them both for giving us their time. The interview with Chantal was right before we went into the stadium for the match, so it's outside. There's lots of noise in the background, lots of energy, all that excitement. The interview we had with Diana was actually at her workplace. Thank you so much, Diana, for letting us come over and have a chat with you. And just enjoy the show, folks. Thanks so much.
Hi, can you give our audience your name and how you identify?
Yes, I am Chantal van der Putten. My first name is Chantal, and I'm gay. Uh-huh. And my pronouns are she and her.
Thank you so much for agreeing to meet up with me, Chantal. You are part of the Rosa Camarada,
yes? Yes, you're right. The translation is, I think, the Pink Fellows or something.
The Pink Fellows.
Maybe.
Now, the Camarada, that's also a term that's used for Feyenoord,
really?
Yes?
Yes, that's true. That's true, yeah. We call ourselves the Camarada. why you are a football fan of Feyenoord. You call yourself Kamerad, and we call ourselves the Pink Kamerads.
Amazing. So how did you come to the beautiful game?
Because of my family. My whole family is for this football club, for Feyenoord, and you don't have a choice so in my family. So when you are young, you have to be for Feyenoord. Uh-huh. You have to go to the matches, and you have to be a little bit fanatic.
Okay,
you say the thing?
Fanatic.
Fanatic, uh-huh. Yes, that's a good word. Yes, yes, uh-huh. You have to be like that. So yeah, we grew up with that.
So did you play growing up, or you just were going to the games?
Only going to the games,
okay.
Yes, yes.
Okay. For you coming out, you said mm-hmm. you identify as gay. How did that come about for you?
It's a long story.
Okay.
So I try to make it a little bit shorter. But my background is Christian, and it was not really allowed to be gay, so it took some time. And I married with a guy for a while. And at the moment, we knew, the both of us, that I'm gay. But it took time to realize that for myself, because it wasn't a topic where we talk about in our friends or family. Mm-hmm. So that was the reason.
It's taboo?
Yes, a little bit. So that's the reason that it took some time. But I'm happy that now I can say that I'm gay and that everyone is supporting me. My family and all my friends are supporting me now. So that's good. But when I was young or younger, it was difficult. It was another time, I think.
Sorry to hear that was difficult. I'm glad it is in a better space for you now. So you have friends who identify as LGBTQ who also come to games at Feyenoord?
Yes, but we don't wear our Rose Camarada outfits or something. We don't have that. It's not safe. But we have 350 members.
Oh, wow.
So that's a lot. Most of them are gay. So, yeah, we have a lot of gays here, but everyone is incognito. How do you say that?
Oh, wow. Incognito.
Yeah, incognito. Yeah. Sometimes I have to find the good words for it.
So 350 members. How long has Rosa Camarada been around?
2 years.
2 years?
Yes, yes.
You're brand new.
Yes.
You already have 350 members.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's amazing, huh? Yeah, yeah. It's big now because when we started our supporters club, we get many death threats, and that was the reason that many people thought we have to support them. And that's the reason that we get more and more members. So that we are.
Wait, so when you started the club, mm-hmm. you started getting death threats when you started or beforehand, and that's why you started it?
No. When we started, because before we never talk about it. And when we start our supporters club, at that moment, we spoke about it in the media and things like that. And for many people, it was very, you say that, it was a reason to send us death threats. So from that moment, we became more and more famous, you can say it maybe like that, uh-huh. Because of that. And that's the reason that more and more people thought we have to support them. And that's the reason that we are big like this. And that's also the reason that we are in television programs or in radio programs. Yeah.
So are there Rosa supporters and other teams as well around
in the Eredivisie? Only in The Hague.
In The Hague.
Yes. The Hague was the first one. ADO The Hague.
ADO.
Yes.
They're no longer in the Eredivisie.
No.
They got relegated.
Yes.
So it's just you.
Yeah, just me. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think they started 10 years ago or something.
Okay.
Yeah, so they are keep going strong, only with the fan club, not with with ADO The Hague. that's the only other one, and we are the only one.
So not even in Amsterdam.
No, but it's not really attractive to start something like this when you see our story. So I think it will take some time for other fans from other clubs to think it's a good idea to do something like this.
So what's your involvement now? You, Chantal, what's your involvement with Rosa Camarada?
I am a member of the board with two other people, and the three of us are on the board. And yeah, we organize events for our members or for people who would like it to join us. And we talk with many organizations, with the government, with the Board of Feyenoord, with people like that about inclusion. So that's one of our biggest parts, to talk about inclusion in football for everyone, of course. Mm-hmm. Most of the time we are, we're doing things like that.
So you went from 0 to 350 in 2 years.
Yes.
Are there social activities? Like, what other stuff do folks do?
Yeah, in the beginning it was very difficult because of the death threats. So it wasn't safe to organize events. So the police told us better to wait some time with things like that. And now it's becoming a little bit more safe because they arrest some supporters. And now we organize a little bit more events with speakers or a panel discussion and with some drinks. And sometimes we will watch a game with each other.
Okay.
But most of the time we are sitting in a stadium by our own friends. So not with all the people together.
You don't have like your section with a rainbow flag.
No. That's not safe. But we like our own friends too much to leave them for the Roze Kamerad.
So regular listeners of our podcast will recognize that we've had on a couple guests from the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And I will just own it up front with folks that I have family here. So I have a personal connection to the country because my sister married a Dutchman. And so I've been here many times. And it's always been a country that I have associated with being pretty progressive and being pretty open-minded about LGBT issues in particular. But to hear you describing this in 2021, right, when this group is forming, that you're receiving death threats and just trying to organize LGBTQ supporters at one Eredivisie club in the entire nation, I'm taken aback. What's that been like for you? I mean, the Netherlands is generally perceived, at least around other parts of the world, as being pretty liberal.
Yeah, I think that was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we were the first country with the same-sex marriage. But after that, we didn't become really further. So I think all the other countries around us, like England, Germany, Spain, Malta, they are further now than we are.
Malta is further than the Netherlands?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think now we need the people from England and Germany to help us to become further, because we didn't come further after the same-sex marriage and things like that. And it was more difficult to be yourself when you were was a young person. So I think it's becoming a little bit better for young people.
Okay.
But when we look to things like this, football, and we talk about inclusion, I think the countries around us are further. And yeah, we are not that progressive when we speak about sports, and it's a taboo at this moment, and it will take some time to come further with this. I spent the last days in Manchester because of the Pride,
Manchester Pride, a lot of fun.
Yes, it was perfect. And I saw everything with all the LGBT supporters clubs, and I couldn't imagine that's possible in the Netherlands at this moment. Mm. I think that will take more time because most of the supporters are afraid of things like woke or something. They call it woke. They don't like that. They say we are tough. We have to be, people have to live.
Oh, we are tough.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
okay.
Gays are not tough.
So it's, yes.
Yeah.
We hear about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, so what is it that you think would be helpful to improve visibility of the LGBTQ community in the game? Whether on the field or in the stands, how do we make this better in the Netherlands? How do we improve it?
I spoke with many people the last days, and we will try to organize an event for the boards of the football clubs. And we think when the boards are in and the boards think it's important to support this, it's easier.
So the boards of the clubs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We think at this moment, most of the boards are thinking it's not necessary, it's not that important. And I think when the boards are involved, it will help for the rest of the football environment.
So you've got a plan.
Yes,
like.
Yes. So we will
organize a plan,
with the English people, yeah.
Uh-huh,
so
okay.
You have to help us.
Okay, well, I'm not English.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. No, I started picking up that you thought I was. No, I'm from Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yes,
sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that's all good. It's all good. But they definitely have a lot of LGBTQ supporter groups in England.
Yeah.
And I've talked to some of their folks as well on the show. It's been delightful to have them on, too. They've definitely organized a lot more than a lot of places, even in the U.S.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got, I'm the president of our LGBTQ supporters group for the Los Angeles Football Club, but which only across the entire United States. There's fewer than 10, I would say, formal LGBTQ supporter groups. So talking to boards, organizing the boards, you've got a plan. Is there anything in particular that you think our audience should know about, like what's happening around LGBTQ folks in soccer in the Netherlands that we haven't talked about yet? Like anything you want them to be aware of or thinking about or share with them?
I think that most of the supporters are great supporters.
Uh-huh.
And there is a little group. They do things that where I told you about.
I think we call them hooligans.
Yes, we call them hooligans, and they call themselves hooligans, and they're really loud. So they are not met that much, but they are really loud. And I think it's important to tell your listeners about this, because otherwise the people in your country are think that everyone is terrible.
All Dutch people are terrible.
No, that isn't. It isn't true. No. Most of the people are lovely, but there's a small, loud group. And I think we need the support of the bigger, nice group.
Yeah, you need the allies.
Yes, we need them to become further. And we hope that the smaller, louder group will become not so loud anymore.
I love it. Well, there are two questions we ask all of our guests on our show.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, who's your favorite women's soccer player?
Oh, Viviane Miedema.
Okay.
Yeah.
Viviane Miedema. So she plays for the Dutch national women's team.
Yes.
I mean, they went further than the U.S. this year, but...
Yeah, yeah. But you have lovely players also.
Oh, we love our team. Yeah. Well, there was some blowback after they lost in the round of 16. There were some pretty awful things said online, but I think they're an incredible team. And there's a lot of people who just adore so many of the players. There's so much to love about the women's game in general.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
When you talk about all these issues around LGBTQ stuff, not as much of an issue in the women's game, right?
I know. You're the same. Yeah.
Do you go to the castle for the games there? The castle, I think, is there's a women's professional team that plays at the castle here in Rotterdam.
Oh, but we have also here.
At the Kuip?
The Kuip, this is the Kuip. But the other club in Rotterdam, we call that the castle.
Yes.
Sometimes I go there also.
Because there's a women's team that plays there, yes?
I go sometimes here for the women's team.
Oh, okay.
And I go to the castle because I like that club also.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, so our second question that we ask all of our guests is, who do you think is the sexiest men's soccer player, past or present?
Sexiest? Are you
handsomest.
Asking me? Are you asking me?
I'm asking you. We've had every one of our guests answer this question, whether they think men are sexy or not.
Oh, let me think. Oh, my God. I have to think about this.
Okay.
Sexy. Oh, my God.
Handsome.
Yes, I noticed. I understand.
Has a good haircut. I mean, just name a player on Rotterdam.
I try.
Here's the roster. You can like just.
Okay, I can see which one is.
For the audience, please note that Chantal is now looking at the roster for Feyenoord because she's that familiar with the handsomeness of the players on the pitch.
Okay. Yes. I have a name.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a player. He's now here.
Now playing for Feyenoord.
Yes. Jimenez.
Santiago Jimenez.
Yes, I will choose him.
Oh, is he Spanish?
He's from Mexico.
Oh, he's Mexican.
Yes.
All right. Yes. We're going to see a Mexican team player on Feyenoord.
Yes, and he's great. But I like his girlfriend more.
Oh.
She's more sexy. But he's also sexy.
Chantal, where can our audience find you on social media?
My name there is CM van der Putten.
Okay, we'll be sure to include that in the episode notes.
I think that's necessary, yeah.
It has been a delight talking with you. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. And nice that you are here now.
Well, let's enjoy this game.
Yes, let's do that.
All right. So we're happy to have with us on the show now, Diana Vanderborn. Do you want to introduce yourself to our audience?
Hi, I'm a 46-year-old lesbian who is really sports fanatic in every single way. I watch more or less every single sport. Football fan, tennis player. I work actually in a sports venue, it's the Dutch National Tennis Center. So I love sports.
Do you have a favorite sport?
At the moment, it would be tennis because I play it myself. I love watching tennis. Also, the mental side to tennis, especially when you play singles. Yeah, the combination of sports and the mental part, that's what really attracts me.
Now, have you played tennis your whole life?
No, I only started in 2015. Before, I used to play basketball, softball, athletics, But then with basketball, then the injuries started to come on and I couldn't keep playing. So then I was looking for another sport. And it was basically by my ex-wife. She was aware that there was an LGBT tennis club in Amsterdam. And she wanted to go and see if that would be something for us. And that's how I ended up playing tennis.
That's
and
great.
I really enjoy it.
I love that. You mentioned tennis and basketball and softball. But this is a show about soccer or football.
Yes, we say football here. Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, please, please. We should say that too, but we have our own
Another way
that you play with your hands.
Yeah.
So what brought you to that game? What is your experience with football?
Well, of course, football or soccer, it is the biggest sports in the Netherlands. Yeah, when I was young, we were always watching all football matches on the telly when I was young. I did grow up with a brother who is a Feyenoord fan. And actually, we do not pronounce Feyenoord normally. So this is really an exception I made. We always use 010, which is the first three numbers of the phone number of Rotterdam. And they will call the people who support Ajax Amsterdam 020, which is the number for Amsterdam. So, there is like a big rivalry between Rotterdam and Amsterdam. That has always been the case, not only because of football, but of course, here it is about football. So I will enlighten that a bit. And my dad, he didn't really support one of the teams. He was rather a bit more to PSV or AZ in Alkmaar, a bit more up north. But yeah, I don't know why. I've always supported Ajax. I always liked the team.
You're like, well, my brother supports 010. I've got to support 020.
Actually, I really got on very well with my brother when I was a very young age. But I don't know how this all started. But I think because I did grow up in Haarlem, which is like 20 minutes from Amsterdam. And I think most of the people did support Ajax. So everyone who was in my school class, they all supported Ajax. So I think I was a bit not involved. I'm missing out a word.
Influenced?
Here. Influenced. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
By my classmates. And it always stayed that way. And of course, it's always nice to have a bit of rivalry at home as well with the family.
So you, through school, through peers, the influence of that experience got into and started loving Ajax. How is it for you that you came out? What's your, what happened for you in terms of coming out as lesbian?
Well, I was quite late with my coming out. I think I was around 21. It all went very easy, I must say. My friends, family, they were all accepting it. Some already had their suspects, of course. So it went quite smooth, to say so. I wasn't experiencing really an homophobic space around me. But also, I didn't really know the LGBT world, to be honest, because when I came out, it was, I think, around 2000, just after the gay games, Amsterdam. But I completely missed out.
Oh, no.
Part. So, it was 25 years because they had like an old remembrance ceremony and whatsoever.
That's when you know you're old.
And then you see all these things that have been happening at that time. And I was like, how on earth did I miss out on this? Because it was broadcasted on the telly and whatsoever, but I didn't see anything, unfortunately. Luckily, I could catch up in the years after. So in the beginning, I was socializing with others. And later, I got involved in voluntary work. First of all, the local LGBT organization. And later, also in national ones, sports one, but also the national LGBT organization, COC Netherlands. So that's how I really got involved in voluntary work for the good cause. And for me, it was also an eye-opener for certain situations, especially in sports. Because, you could really see the differences in the different sports areas when it comes to LGBT-friendly environments. And unfortunately, in football, or soccer, we still have a major issue here in the Netherlands. None of the Dutch pro players came out. There has been researches amongst the pro players, and we do know that there are active players who are gay, but not openly out, of course.
So when you say research, you mean like people have talked to them privately and they've revealed this?
Yeah, there was a research from the Football Association, and they are linked to the John Blankenstein Foundation, that is basically an organization who's focusing on football in the Netherlands when it comes to LGBT issues. As John Blankenstein was a former referee, an openly gay referee, and Unfortunately, he passed away at quite a young age. But yes, his name is still alive, and it's a very, very known organization in the Netherlands. And his sister is managing this organization. So we work together with the John Blankenstein Foundation as well. And they have very good contacts with the Dutch Football Association. So that's how this research was created amongst the players, because there's also like an official organization who is in contact with all the pro players in the Netherlands. So not everyone replied, of course, but a lot did.
So they know there are players who identify as gay or bisexual.
Well, not openly. They know that they identify in that way, but only they keep it within the team or only with some close friends.
Was there more information revealed from this study you're referencing? I'm genuinely curious because I've not heard of this study before. I'm very curious about what they said that shared why players would not reveal this.
As far as I know, this did not come out of a research. It was just an investigation on, do you know any players, or maybe you are one yourself, but not talking about it. So it was really a thin line because, of course, they were scared that someone else, other players, would out them. And that's where we see that we still have a big problem in the Netherlands. When you look at other sports, also team sports, and then I'm really talking about male team squads.
Men's.
Yeah.
Let's be clear.
And the lesbians, we don't really have the problem. We'd rather have it in the other way.
Right.
But
right.
No, with the men's squads, like, for example, volleyball, hockey players, we do have players who officially came out. But I think where we really see the difference when it comes to football, because football is just main sports in the Netherlands, the stadiums are full with thousands of people. And this is not a safe environment, not for the players, but also not for the fans and even the referees. We do have one or two openly out referees in the Netherlands, but they really struggle most of the time because of the chants in the stadium. And also the Dutch fans, they aren't really friendly when they sing in the stadiums.
Are there specific homophobic chants that people use?
Yes.
And what's the response to that? Does that ever get called out at all? Or does it just happen and
just ignore
it?
Because, the officials can't do anything about it because it's not pointed at a certain player. No, it's different if you have a person of color playing and that they're making the monkey noises or something. That happens too. Not a lot anymore, but it happened in the past as well. People throwing bananas on the field. But with this thing, you can really see whenever a player of color is getting the ball and people start to do it, then it's clear that this is towards the player. Mm. When it's just a general song mocking on the other fans or the other team or whatsoever, it's not really that they can do something about it. And also in the stadiums, you have been talking to the Roze Kameraden. You must have heard their story when they came forward as the Roze Kameraden, just the organization itself. It wasn't about anything. I mean, they got threatened and whatsoever. And the Dutch football fans, they are not the nicest ones. And then I really talk about the fans from the male squads. Because with the women's football, everyone's sitting mixed, and even Ajax and Feyenoord supporters can sit next to each other.
Right.
But when it comes to men's football, unfortunately, especially the last 2 years, we see a lot of violence in the stadiums as well. So even just families with young kids, they don't want to go to the stadiums anymore because of all the stuff that's happening. They had to pause matches.
So what would they pause a match for?
Well, if people throw stuff on the field or towards players. And sometimes, with people of color, in that way, when you really hear that they are discriminating someone, then the referee will say, if the player will go to the referee, the referee will not do it from himself.
So the player would have to initiate it.
Yeah, the player has to go to the referee and then they decide together, we're not going to play further until this stops. But unfortunately, people can, even if they aren't allowed anymore in the stadiums, they find another way to get in.
And so you're an Ajax supporter?
Yes.
Do you go to games regularly or?
No, not, no, I don't go to the stadium very often. Why? I don't know exactly, but maybe because on the television you can see it better actually
yeah.
With all the Yeah, all the reviews and stuff. Yeah, also because I don't really like the environment. I do go to matches of the Dutch national team every now and then the atmosphere is completely different.
How so?
Yeah, it's just weird because then, and like an Ajax and PSV fan can sit next to each other without knowing, but they just support the same team. And the other week, they can smack each other's head. But really
what,
weird.
What is the experience? So for our audience, many in our audience are supporters of teams in the Major League Soccer, which is a North American professional league for Canada and the U.S. How would you describe to someone who's accustomed to an environment in the States what they would expect if they came to a match at Ajax?
I think they might get a bit shocked, especially when it comes to all the security that is around the stadium for the match itself. Yeah, I think that might be a bit threatening as well for people from abroad to visit the match. I mean, they really keep, whenever they play a team in the Champions League or Conference League or whatsoever, yeah, with certain teams, I mean, you can't even keep people together because then there will be riots and stuff.
We went to Feyenoord to Kuip, and the away fans for Almere City were behind a fence.
Yeah, basically sort of locked up. Yeah,
yes.
And that you will see tonight in the Ajax match as well. And sometimes it really comes to the opponent, because I know that Feyenoord and Roma, they really clash every time. Yeah, they really have, even in the city center, they have to keep them separate, because otherwise, yeah, they're going crazy.
So you talked about how different the LGBTQ experience is in different sports, and particularly for team sports being potentially a little more difficult, I think, than individual sports. What would you see as something that could be done to improve the welcomingness of, that's not really a word, we'll just pretend that's a word, for LGBTQ people in football?
Well, change the fan club. Yeah, how fan clubs are organized or are accepted, because...
Can you say a little more about that?
Yeah, well, I know that to become an official fan club, you have to have like at least, I don't know, it depends on the team, but thousands of members. And I think it would really help if they start welcoming like smaller groups of fans. And I know, for example, in The Hague, they do have like a supporters network because they have like different groups as well. And also there they have the Roze Reigers, which is the fan club of The Hague. They are involved with these meetings with other supporters groups and stuff. They organize stuff. They even have like a bingo evening or whatever, and with a drag coming in. And I think that's a way to open up as well, that they can see, okay, we need to accept them. They are also supporting the same team, and that should be supported by the clubs more.
So is the club in Den Haag, are they an official supporter group?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
And are Rosa Camarada as well?
Yes.
The Feyenoord?
Well, not from Feyenoord, I think. But to be honest, I don't know very well. But in The Hague, they are. I know.
So changing the criteria to allow groups that maybe are an important, I'm just going to try and interpret a little bit sort of my way of hearing what you said, but that are important parts of the fan supporter culture, but maybe don't have the ability to sort of connect as broadly as some of these other groups might, but are really important to be part of it, to be acknowledged, to be uplifted within
it. Yes, that is a really important thing to do, just to bring all the fan clubs together, even if they aren't an official fan club. Yeah, just to show that they are there as well to support the club, but that they want to feel safe and make the others aware what can be the result if other groups are singing homophobic chants in the stadium, for example. I always take the example of a dad with his like 13, 14-year-old son going to a stadium who also keeps singing these homophobic chants in the stadium, where the son is in his development, maybe of coming out or having his doubts. Oh, I don't know who I am. And yeah, then he looks at his dad and he's singing these songs, and then he already doesn't feel accepted. So he doesn't feel safe to come out. And we see that people disappear, not going to the matches anymore, especially in football teams, that they don't want to play anymore because gay, well, when you translate it to homo, that's the most used swear word on the pitch, actually. when you look at the like the youngsters and stuff, and also in schools. And it's never in a positive way.
Right. Right. It's not like, oh, wow, you're so
yeah,
homo.
No, you know, I always joke, well, when we had like the World Cup where we almost made it, but unfortunately Spain won in 2010. Then we had one of the players, he just scored an amazing goal. But you will never hear, oh, that's so gay or
right.
something in a positive way.
Right, right.
But whenever he screws up,
right.
then this player, oh, he's so gay. So it's the word is used in a very negative way. And I think it also starts with the tennis association that they have to try to go to the clubs more. Mm. I know that there are already like special toolboxes for clubs in the Netherlands to become LGBT friendly. But we don't see that they use it very often. Or there are even chairs of football clubs who say, oh, no, we don't have gays here. So what's the problem?
So you just pivoted to tennis. So for our audience, I want to make sure we understand. You're talking now about what you do in your job.
Mm-hmm.
So are you finding that you're having some difficulty getting folks to really understand the importance of inclusivity around the LGBTQ community in tennis as well?
No, because tennis is rather an individual sport. But I think the Tennis Association can do more. Mm. They do a lot already. They have like a special flag with the Tennis Association and the rainbow flag on it. I know that board members, that they were on one of the floats at the Amsterdam Pride.
On one of the boats.
Yeah.
Love that. That's like boats down the canal. Yeah.
But yeah, of course, they invite Ajax Amsterdam every year, but they've never making the effort to get on one of the boats.
Amsterdam Pride invites Ajax
and
the club refuses.
Well, I don't know if it's refusing
or just,
you know, coming up with excuses. Oh, no, sorry. It's in the middle of the summer break, so most players aren't here. But they don't really make an effort to get the players on one of the boats. And because like in June, when it's also after the season, mm-hmm. we have like a small canal parade in Utrecht. And there, some of the players from Utrecht were actually on one of the boats.
Okay.
So, and we have seen individual sportsmen and women were out. They were on the boat as well. But yeah, most people don't know them, unfortunately, because they're not really into sports that much.
One of the more exciting things we got to do with Pride Republic, our LGBTQ supporter mm-hmm. group, and the Los Angeles Football Club was LA Pride this year, where we marched in the parade with over 130 of our supporters of the club. We had the trophies that we had just won, the heads of our supporter group. And it was just so much fun just doing our chants and cheers for walking along this parade route for thousands of people who were joining in with us and getting to experience and see themselves reflected in a club where maybe they wouldn't have thought they would have been mm-hmm. otherwise, right? It's a moment that makes an impression with people.
Yeah, that's happening a lot in the Netherlands as well. Of Amsterdam, they have like a pride march as well. There are several LGBT sports clubs who have their own boat.
And what was the VUV you referenced earlier that you're part of?
The COC? No, that's the common national LGBT organization.
Yeah,
they deal with, well, I don't know what, but a lot. Of course, I do know what they are involved in, but rather youth projects, the elderly, disabled people, people of color, intersex, trans people, loads of projects, also a bit of sports. But what we've seen going to the sports community, what really helped and worked is actually to see it from a sports point of view and what it does to a sports person mentally and when you're not able to give yourself completely in sports because you have something to hide.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, it is exhausting. I can imagine. I'm happily out, so I don't have that problem anymore. Yeah. But that's really what can convince sports associations to do a bit more specific on this topic. And COC is really seen as the LGBT organization. So then they enter from this point of view, and that still causes a bit of, a bit conflict with the sports association. Mm. So they are there in the background. They support all the LGBT sports organizations. But it's good that it is basically coming from the sports point of view and what affects the sports people. Because then they are interested and see the problem actually more. Hopefully that will grow a bit more. But I think when it comes to the atmosphere in stadiums, in football, there things really need to change, and not just about the LGBT acceptance.
For sure, that sounds like a lot.
There is a lot going on there, and unfortunately not in a very positive way.
And I think fairly connected, right? Like there's sort of this thread of here are the people who we think are acceptable, who represent strength and power, and here's the rest who don't. And anyone who's outside of that line becomes targeted, whatever they represent. Well, this has been a really fascinating conversation. And I have to thank you for that, both for being willing to sort of just go there with me, but also for taking time out of your day. We are at the National Tennis Center in Amstelveen, where you work. Really appreciate you taking time. We have two very important questions we ask all our guests at the end of every one of our episodes. And I did mention to you literally right before we sat down. So I hope that you've had a few minutes to come up with an answer.
Yeah.
So the first of our two questions is, who is your favorite women's footballer?
Dominique Janssen.
Dominique Janssen.
Yeah.
Because she's just a good player.
She's a very good player, defender. And she's not even lesbian, but still, yeah, she's good looking. So I like to watch her. But she's she's always also very, a very good player.
I mean, it's helpful when all those things align.
Yeah, right? Of course, yeah.
So then our second very important question, and I understand this may be a little tougher for you, but we ask all our guests, who is the sexiest men's footballer, past or present?
Oh, that's so difficult.
You got a lot to choose from.
Yeah. I know. It's really difficult. I actually look at the way they play football, not really how they look, of course. I'm trying to think of a Dutchie, but they're not that good looking. Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, then I will go for my second love, England, and then it will be David Beckham.
Oh, David Beckham. He's in Angelino now, I think. He spends a lot of his time in Los Angeles. Well, actually, he's in Miami. What am I saying?
I think he has several clubs now.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Doing a good job over there.
he's enjoying it. He's enjoying his time.
Yeah.
That's a great answer. So, Diana, this has been an absolute pleasure. Where can our audience find you on social media?
They can find me at Facebook, Diana Van Den Born, B-O-R-N. Yeah, Insta, Twitter, or X, we need
whatever
to say
it's
now.
Called.
Yeah, loads of stuff. I am also involved in several organizations. Like, we have our own association, me and my partner. It's called the L World.
The L World.
World,
I love that play on words.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Because we just want to create one L world, because within the women's communities, it can be a bit hot between the different groups, but we try to just get them together and just show that we are all proud lesbians. And
that's great. And is that limited to the Netherlands?
At the moment, yes.
Okay, so it's the Dutch L world.
for the moment, it is. But we hope it will grow further and further. And we'll see. We only started like 2 years ago or something. Okay. And I have another fun fact for you when it comes to the Ajax fans, because there are a few groups that are really, well, actually, I think they just let them walk through into the stadium because they are scared of them, the security and stuff. But I know that one of their top men within the group, that he is gay, but of course he's still in the closet, but it's very interesting. So he can be very aggressive, but he is amongst all the other fans. So even within like the really rude,
the hardcore
fans,
yes,
there are gay men out there. So
we're everywhere.
Of course. thank god where would we be without them?
That's right. Well, on that note, thank you so much, Diana, for being on LGBTFC. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Bryant, what's one thing you learned on this episode?
Oh, I don't know if I can narrow it down to one thing. A few of the things that struck me include what we heard from Chantal and Diana, and then also from our friend Bowie around like death threats, especially from like the early founders of the supporters, and hearing Diana's story about the father and son, and just thinking, one, being very appreciative of the steps that LAFC front office have taken and the 3252 have taken in terms of really promoting inclusion and stamping out any sort of, you know, negative behaviors or sentiments, and really like sticking to that moral fabric. And then I think Diana's story about the father and son in the stands, and just thinking about like, we keep thinking that the Netherlands are like so far advanced because they were the first to acknowledge or recognize same-sex marriage. And the reality is like, if you're not doing the work constantly, then this is going to sound stupid, but the work's not being done. But really the people who are saying that like, oh no, we don't need to do anything else, are the people who already feel safe or are the perpetrators of that feeling of being unsafe. And then to wrap it all up, I guess, again, I told you it wasn't one thought. When Chantal was talking about connecting with the other like supporter groups from the English Premier League, and it just sort of made me appreciate what this podcast has afforded us and hopefully the listeners. And that is like the connection and the community building, both within MLS and around the world. So that's my takeaway. How about that?
Wow. Wow. One thing.
It was a big thing.
It was a big thing. And I love it. And basically, that was just about everything I was going to say. So since I had no idea what you were going to say, Brian, what I will also add was how Diana talked about the need to maybe bend the rules a little bit for groups that need to be included, that need to be uplifted, but maybe don't have the same sort of broad reach or scope that the typical supporters groups might be able to have, which enables them to reach sort of these threshold numbers that they can more easily qualify to be official supporter groups. When you're trying to get an LGBTQ supporter group for a soccer club, maybe you have to think about, well, we can't get X number of people. We can maybe get a smaller number, and it's still important that we make that possible for that group to become an official supporter group. So that stuck with me. That's our show, y'all. Please, if you don't already, follow us on social media. We are on Twitter/X and Instagram at @LGBT_FC Pod. Special thank yous to our guests, Chantal van der Putten and Diana Vandenborn. And special thank yous as well to Brittany Dunton for our music, Ray Dang for our artwork, Melissa Sanchez for our social media, Cheer LA for their cheers on our music, and Pride Republic for their financial support. That's our show. Have a gay day.
LGBTFC Pod!